lose any part of the property?
No, sir. We were very fortunate. We were able to maintain the property. The circuit court judge could see the situation very clearly, what was attempted here. This was a very, I want to use a quote, a sly behavior, unquote, by this individual.
You didn't have the ability to go after them for your costs?
I was told I had no chance to get anything back. The man did claim he cut 15 to 20 cords of wood on this property. There's a statute of limitation and it isn't up, and it's triple damages. I've been in the logging business long enough to know it's triple damages, and I have contemplated, I finally have convinced my wife. She likes to turn the other cheek, and she's decided, just in fact this morning, I think, that it might be interesting to find out if something could be done with that. I don't like to behave that way. I don't do things that way in my world. But the cost was so high, like I said, and you can check with your doctors if you wish. I have no problem giving them the names and so on. It was nip and tuck for 6 hours there over this thing. That's what the cost was, more than dollars. And I know some people have even had heavier costs than dollars. I know somebody that had a heart attack over a situation because of possession of property. Now, I can understand you're out here in the middle of a 5,000-acre field or something, and there could be a discrepancy in the property line, or I've got a good farmer in Salt Creek, a good friend of mine. He'd been farming this ground. His father farmed it, and everybody farmed it up together. It was surveyed because the heirs decided to sell one of the pieces of property. That's all right. Everyone knew, you know, because they'd all farmed up the same line. I've got no problem with that kind of situation. But when a person goes in and purposely goes after, I had proof enough to know that. I knew that. But it's so easy to do it. So easy. Representative John Schoon was here last time. And if I can relate it in essence, he testified, if you people were here, that he could have acquired somebody else's property without any problem because they all said the line belonged where they told him to put the fence. And he stuck to it and said, no, it doesn't belong there. And he found the old stake. And he could have acquired someone's property because they all agreed. He should have. So you see, it depends on which way you want to go with this. As if you want to acquire, if you need the land. So.
Further questions?
Sorry to take longer than I wanted
that's
to.
That's fine. That's fine.
But there might be some chance sometime. I don't like to do things like that.
Mr. Smith? Welcome.
Nice to hear about an honest politician. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Thurman Smith from Lyons, Oregon, representing the Oregon State Drains. The Oregon State Drains supports House Bill 2534. I come before you today fully realizing how unnecessary my presence is. First, because many cases of individual personal grievance illustrating the need for this bill will be brought to your attention. Second, far be it from me to attempt or say anything that could be implied as an attempt to tell this committee what the law is. We believe, however, that the instances of application to accomplish the original purposes of quieting titles, which are openly and consistently asserted, to provide proof of meritorious titles, and to correct errors in conveyancing are becoming fewer in number. Plats, legal descriptions that are available and probably given to just about everybody this day and time should help that problem. However, on the other hand, we learn of cases, the outcome of which we cannot understand, and people out there get the opinion that the statute rewards the diligent trespasser and penalizes the owners that are unaware that they're sleeping on their rights. Many owners are not aware of the fact that they should make periodic inspections to prevent loss of their land by years of occupancy unknown to them. There are instances where the claimant knows that his physical occupancy and his paper title do not coincide. He plans to use the statute to defeat the true title, and he has no problem with a conflict involving a technical right and a moral wrong. You will hear, I'm sure, of cases where an owner playing the role of the Good Samaritan was, in principle, mugged by the beneficiary. And people become concerned and wonder how a wrong can mature into a right. The Grange is always concerned when we hear of people that are losing confidence in the court system or any part of the court system, and we feel that the time has come when something should be done about the statute, and we believe that this bill is a step in that direction.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you both, or all three of you, very much for listening to us today. We sure appreciate that. And being patient enough to let us stay around.
Well, we
do. 2 years ago, we jammed the place like this morning.
I see. Well, thanks for not.
Thank you. We didn't know what was going
to happen. Neither did we. Mr. Grzynski, is it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm William Grzynski from Lebanon, Oregon. I have a written testimony which is being passed now. I won't take too much time here. I am in favor of Bill 2534 because the way our present adverse possession law is used allows an individual to take property away from another, and this essentially encourages crime. Land ownership should be more positive than it is now. If I have a good title, if I'm paying my taxes, there's no reason why any part of my land should be vulnerable to be acquired by another through use of a law that supersedes what my deed grants me. We very much need to revise the current adverse possession law. Bill 2534 will do this for us.
I'm just excuse me, Mr. I was reviewing your written testimony.
If there are any questions, I have a exhibit here that I can present what happened in that created my problem.
If you could show, just state right there and show me where your fence line is or the tree line is.
Oh, my property is the 25 acres of adjoining properties there. The true property line is the solid line. Neighbor came along on this broken line, started all right here.
Right.
And he deviated onto my land. And when I called him on it, he said, I'll move the fence. His house is located in this corner, but this I want to retain because the adverse possession law allows me to do this.
And how long was that fence there?
This has been 9 years now.
I see. Okay.
I still have a little grace period, but it's in limbo right now. And I think if we do the right thing with this bill, it'll do that. But I want it to be fine.
Mr. Grzynski, let me see if there's questions from other committee members. Thank you very much. Grace Biggs. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes. It'd be dark except it's daylight savings time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My name is Grace Biggs. I live on a five-acre parcel of land that was once a large farm that has Crowvon Road running east and west on the south side of our property. At one time, the Vaughan Road ran north of the property along the quarter section line. It was vacated in 1929. If it were the present road, I would not be before you today. Sometime in the teens, the road was changed, and to avoid a muddy hill, looped down across this farm. The property owners on the north of this farm, having the same boundary, the quarter section line, claimed adverse possession and won in court to be awarded all of the land to our pasture fence. He removed his fence, by the way. And our fence down there had been built many years before by this farmer that owned the whole piece. We lost timber as well as land in the amount of about $2,500, plus considerable attorney's fees. The adjoining person, Robert Clone, that lives next door to us, and we had the same lawyer, and he told us it would be about $5,000 to fight this, and he charged $10,000 when we got through. And Robert Clone, who was a paraplegic from Vietnam War, lost an acre of land, and ours is about an acre. And some others lost other amounts. My purpose in support of a statutory law on adverse possession is to point out the inconsistency of the present common law. Terms used in adverse possession, such as notorious, exclusive, and hostile, can be misleading. I'm familiar with a good many terms. I've been an English teacher, music teacher, beautician, writer, and I know a lot of, I'm familiar with a lot of terms, but these have connotations that are used by those conspiring to gain land free and clear, taxes paid, and if the land has a mortgage, they don't pay it. The true owner pays it. I know a case like that. These things are happening to too many people in Oregon. Landowners are being deprived of property rights with no compensation, and as we know from experience, the case law by judges like Roland Rodman that judged our case could not perceive beyond his first impression of the plaintiff. This bill will not help me, as we have lost our property, but victims of these acts are beginning to object loudly. Time is vital to enacting a statutory law on adverse possession. I support House Bill 2534. Do you have any, are there any questions?
Questions?
I have a map of what happened to us, too, showing, if you want to look at it.
Yes. I'd like, I don't know, is that an extra copy by chance?
No, it isn't.
Okay, if I could look at it, and while we hear from, and the committee would probably want to glance through it as we hear from Elsie Pruitt, how's that? And then we'll return it to you after. Thank you for coming. Elsie Pruitt?
Well, I'm Hope Pruitt, and good evening.
Good evening.
I did not have anything written down to say, but as we were one of the first ones to start talking about this adverse possession, a section quarter marker of our property with the same one that goes down to Grace Biggs's, and we had mutual consent to build a fence along the line where we had it surveyed. Well, after the fence was built and so forth, then the others decided to do the same, so then this man started suing us. So we had consequently had Edward Fadley as a lawyer, and we settled out of court the night before, so we really lost nothing except we built our fence on the inside about 12 to 16 inches so it wouldn't be on the line and not in their way either. So when everything was settled, they decided that they would take that 1/100th of an acre and take it off of our contract and put it on theirs. And I don't think it's been publicized enough. I've been on airplanes and talked to people and talked to other people around, and most 2/3 of people have never heard of what adverse possession is. And I feel like maybe if we got it just a little bit more publicized, because we are thankful we got our land back, but I am happy to help out anyone else.
Okay.
And that wasn't too much, was it?
Questions?
Yes, is it?
Thank you very much.
That's okay.
Are there other witnesses here on 2534? Okay, thank you. We'll close the hearing on 2534, we have House Bill 2520. Mr. Sitzma, Mr. Hunter, and Council, would you want to try Representative Anderson? I told him we probably wouldn't get back to the bill, but he is the chief sponsor, and I think he had 1 minute of testimony or 2 minutes, but by chance he's still in his office. We'll try to get his testimony this time also. But I'm certain that these individuals can help us out. get set up here. I must apologize. I know you guys are very busy and have many more important things to do than deal with this legislature. Believe me, I feel guilty. I apologize. But let's go.
We appreciate you staying here long enough to hear this.
Well, there's got to be a better system, I know.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Leonard Sitzman. I'm Assistant Administrator with the Health and Family Services Division and responsible for the Recovery Services section in that division, which involves child support, overpayments, fraud investigations, the state's administration, and programs to recover the cost of public assistance. House Bill 2520, as you know, has to do with the access to bank accounts. One of the big reasons that we are in favor of the passage of 2520 has to do with child support enforcement. When child support is not enforced, and it's probably the biggest unenforced civil disobedience, if you will, can't call it a crime unless it becomes willful non-support and contempt, but criminal contempt, but it is probably the biggest problem that we have in terms of debts not being paid. This bill would allow us access to those bank accounts and allow us to save the taxpayers some money. I can't give you an exact figure on how much we could save. There are other states that have similar laws that say there are great savings from it. I can assure you that it will more than pay any cost we have in administering it. I talked to Representative Anderson and thought he was going to be here, and I understand the problem, so I'm not critical of that, but we had agreed and submitted with the banking lobby and submitted to him a possible amendment to the bill, which would allow the financial institution to require us to do the request by computer tape if they chose to do that to make it easier. Representative Anderson indicated to me, I guess it was yesterday, I'm losing track of time, but that he would introduce that amendment. So I expect that will be forthcoming.
Let me point out, make perfect clear that it's my fault that he's not here.
I understand that. I'm not being critical, and I would have not even brought up this amendment, except he's not here, and I want
you
to be aware.
Could you explain that a little bit, I guess?
The amendment?
Or actually, why don't I finish receiving your testimony, and then we'll get Mr. Hunter's testimony, and then we'll ask questions.
Okay, that's fine. That I've given you a copy of written testimony.
Yes.
In the interest of time. I would only be repeating what I've already said or is written down, so.
Okay. Mr. Hunter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Hunter. I'm Administrator of the Support Enforcement Division of the Department of Justice. We have submitted written testimony. We do support the bill. We have seen the proposed amendment by Representative Anderson. We would support that in recognition of trying to reduce some of the cost to the banking industry. We also have attached to our testimony technical amendments to include the Support Enforcement Division as one of the agencies along with DHR that would be able to request this information so far as child support is concerned. I will not repeat my written testimony. I do want to emphasize to the committee, though, one potential issue. When you start talking about peeking into people's bank accounts, the aura of Big Brother comes to mind. I want to emphasize that I'm both personally and professionally sensitive about that issue. But we're not talking about Big Brother here. As Mr. Sitzman indicated, and to use the terms of people testifying on the immediate previous bill, what we are talking about is open and notorious avoidance of a legal child support obligation. We are talking about people who are not paying that obligation, and we are talking about being able to try to find some way of locating financial assets that they do in fact have. When we receive child support payments, we're able to many times see where that check comes from. Those people aren't the problem. We can find where their bank account is. But again, they're at least making some effort to pay. The people we're talking about are people who are simply ignoring, avoiding, and running from that obligation. and it is very difficult for us to find those financial assets. And more often than not, they do exist. And so, again, very sensitive about the public trust that I have with the information that we have access to. We're talking about here a very good child support enforcement tool that I think will solve a much greater problem than any kind of consideration about peeking in people's bank accounts. We will not do that indiscriminately. They will be people with a child support obligation, people who have avoided paying that child support obligation. Then and only then would we ask a particular bank if, in fact, that person did have an account there. And if they did, we would then proceed with legal means to garnish that bank account. So again,
could you repeat those two criteria again, and then we'll receive Representative Anderson's testimony? Only those that have...
Well, you're talking about, in the case of the Support Enforcement Division, only those people that have a child support obligation and those who are avoiding paying that legally established child support obligation. Now, the bill does go further and would authorize, in the case of the person's permission, seeking information for recipients of public assistance. The Support Enforcement Division and the amendments we submitted would not be involved in that process, only in the process of using this access to enforce child support that has not been paid.
Okay. Representative Anderson, thank you for... you made it after all, I guess. I do apologize. I'm glad that you're still in your office working hard. And we're still here in this room.
The least I could do, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2520 is our second go-around with this bill. This bill did pass the House of Representatives with one exception. I voted 53-6 last session. The child support was deleted from the bill last session for various reasons. The bill originally, where it originated, really was in the state of Massachusetts. I believe you have before you an article from the Oregonian last fall stating that four other states have since joined with the state of Massachusetts with the computer bank match program, and in the article you will see also that the federal government is considering legislation. There have been bills in the last three sessions of Congress in this particular regard. Massachusetts' experience was rather startling in that in a trial run of 6% of their recipients, they found 3,345 violators of the maximum allowable amount of funds in the bank accounts. They actually found six people who had in excess of $100,000 in the bank that were still on public assistance. The Massachusetts experience would show that they had a potential, I'm trying to get through my papers here, Mr. Chair. I'll read the summary that we got from Massachusetts 2 years ago. To summarize, the bank match has produced a savings of $7.7 million. The projected caseload savings upon completion of $25 to $30 million. Potential recruitment could account for another $20 million. From that, I believe it seems, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to be a worthwhile project. Last session, everybody signed off on the bill, including legal aid, the banking community, the Department of Resources. The banking community, I believe, you should have before you a proposed amendment that merely makes it absolutely clear that these requests will be submitted on computer tape. This is a technicality that would make the whole program feasible. The banking community had some concerns about last session about remuneration. And we did write into the bill I can locate it.
But it's
a little bit blurry right now, but it is in the bill that financial institutions will have fair remuneration for the work involved in the computer match program. The bill had wide support, and unfortunately, it was a victim of the, what we call it, the massacre day over in the Senate side judiciary. Like 40-some bills were tabled in one day over there. It's unfortunate that the committee on the Senate side that doesn't seem to have the time to do justice to a lot of the bills, and good bills that this committee seems to put out and do a lot of hard work with. But that was the story of the bill last time. We feel it would go a long way towards recouping some money that could be used for things like two-parent families or what other good purpose in the programs. I'd be glad to answer questions. I have a file back in my office about 3 inches thick in correspondence. We have been in contact with Massachusetts within the last month through legislative research, and the program is still working well.
And we also have from you, we'll make part of the record, is this from Legislative Council or Legislative Research on the bank match and interim analyses?
I believe it went to Kathleen Beaufay, and I did work with Legislative Research on the project. We have other things that are available.
Okay, and we'll make sure the Oregonian article is also part of the record. And Representative Peterson has a question. A
couple questions, if I may, since I wasn't here last session. Now, this bill applies only to the state of Oregon. In other words, there's no way, as I understand, that you could go outside of the state and look at accounts in other states.
Chairman, Representative Peterson, that's my understanding. Okay. I think the justice people could answer the question better than I.
I'm going to ask Mr. Hunter a question later on that pertains to that.
Okay. Would you agree with that, Jim? That
it's yes,
strictly
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, that's my understanding.
Okay. Okay. And one other, have there been any cases in other states dealing with the constitutionality of this issue, or whether it's an invasion of privacy or anything to that nature?
This is certainly not a formal opinion, and I wouldn't want to present it that way, but I asked that question of the attorney in the Department of Justice who advises us, and informally, which counts for that, but in discussion, he didn't see a problem.
Council?
I have a couple of questions, and I think Mr. Hunter may help me out. Mr. Hunter, are you aware of, or maybe Mr. Sitzma may, when you apply for welfare or AFS benefits, don't you sign a release? Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Does this release, isn't it a general release saying that the person, the agency, has access to almost any records they want?
Well, there is a part of the application process that gives us the right to check into bank accounts. The problem with that process is that it really is dependent upon the individual then to identify where they may have bank accounts. Now, there are two or three parts to this bill. If we knew what financial institution they have told us they have an account in, it's my understanding, and I need to clarify here, I'm not the expert on eligibility, but if we knew from that aspect, but if we knew where they had an account, yes, we get a release and we can go find out whether there's money there. Anyone really intent on hiding from you is not going to tell you what bank to go ask and is not going to give you the information about the account or the release on it. Okay. The other part of this bill, though, that I'm particularly interested in, and that is not to make it all light of the issue with regard to eligibility and the possible use in terms of detecting and prosecuting fraud. The other part of the bill I'm very, very much interested in is the ability to enforce child support. In that instance, the individuals give us nothing, I can guarantee you. As a matter of fact, we usually have to run them down to find them, and then they're not going to volunteer any assets if they're trying to avoid child support. And there is no way to force them to do that. So you simply have to go search.
So the initial release for eligibility is a general release, though?
I'm going to defer that. What I'd rather do is get back to you. I'll get you a copy of that very release and send it to the chairman if that would suffice so that you
council,
have it.
Yeah, if you could, or just send it to council's office, actually.
Fine, I'll get it for you.
Sure. Council?
Yeah, I guess I have a similar feeling as Mr. Hunter, big brother looking over you. In terms of the last section, which no one's really mentioned, section 6, the taking subject to a provisional process or attachment, does this kind of contravene some of the protections under ORS 23, certain protections under exemptions from garnishment and attachment? I'm wondering if certain bank accounts were totally wages, could you attach the entire bank account or checking account for back child support or whatever?
No. I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of that is when you locate, as I understand, when you locate the bank account, you don't want the money to be transferred in ownership or somehow otherwise secreted, and you still are nowhere, because as Mr. Hunter indicated, for instance, in the case of child support,